Okay, today,
I would like to, 170? Well, we're not going to start there anyway. I would like to maybe, I thought that we would take an interesting look at the Chumash from a different perspective. And that is, I want to sort of focus on the perspective of Reuven.
How come? You're prejudiced?
Am I prejudiced? I would hope so. Not only is that my name, but we see very, very interesting things happen in the life of Reuven. Very, very interesting. And in order to understand them, you can't just look at a parsha as one specific unit. You have to look at the events as a whole as they appear in the Chumash. So in order to really understand this, the first thing you have to do is, we'll start with our parsha, and then we're going to move back, and we're going to look forward. And then we'll see if we can find some sort of pattern or tendencies in the parsha that would sort of give us an indication of how to understand his personality. Okay. What event happens surrounding Reuven in the sixth parsha? It's a long parsha. It covers a lot of events. Yaakov and his children return from the land of Canaan. But what events happened that surround Reuven, that involve Reuven? No idea? Nobody remembers? Turn to page 188. Okay. Torah tells us, Pasuk Yud Tes at the very bottom. We know that Rachel gives birth to a boy as she's entering Beit Lechem. And then the Torah tells us, and she calls him Binyamin, Ben Oni, the son of my affliction, because she dies in childbirth. Vatamash Rachel dies. And Rachel died. Vatikaver v'derech Ephrata, he Beis Lechem. And she was buried on the way to Ephrat, which is Beis Lechem. And anybody knows, if you travel from Yerushalayim to Ephrat, the fastest way to go is right through Beis Lechem. So nowadays, and they don't do that anymore. Nowadays they have the Kvish Okef, the road around. But it was for many, many years, the way to go was right through Beit Lechem. Has anybody been to Kever Rachel recently?
Yeah, not recently. A couple of years.
Since they built it up?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not what it used to be.
Oh, no.
We used to walk every day.
Outside doesn't look like anything. Right.
It was 4 kilometers from where we lived. We lived in Gilo. We used to walk like once a month, maybe every other week from Gilo to Kever Rachel.
On Shabbos. Really? That's a walk. Okay.
It was great. It was a place to go, and it was wonderful.
Hang out, have a party, right? You know, talk with friends.
Yeah. Not too. We have a bunch of us just walking.
Okay. Vayatzev Yaakov Matseva al Kiburata. Yaakov planted a Matseva, a gravestone, a monument. He Matseves Kiburas Rachel ad Hayom. That is the Matseva for the death of Rachel, for the buried place of Rachel until today. Okay, so Yaakov, actually, this is the first hint of Matseva that we have ever. This is the first conversation of Matseva. Very nice. Next. Vayisa Yisrael, vayet ahalom mihala lemigdal eder. So Yaakov, Yisrael, continued to travel. And he planted his tent, mehala, from there, lemigdal eder. Okay, beyond Migdal Eder. So he went, I don't know where Migdal Eder is personally, he went and he traveled to Migdal Eder. Vayehi bishkon Yisrael ba'aretz ahi, and it was when Yisrael dwelled in that place. Vayelech Reuven, vayishkav et Bilha pelegesh aviv, vayishma Yisrael. And Reuven, here we are, I'm surprised Oslo translates it literally, and it came to pass that when Israel dwelt in that land, Reuven went and lay with Bilhah his father's concubine, and Israel heard. Now don't get me wrong, even if we assume that there were no mitzvot at the time, there still were seven mitzvot b'nei Noach. Everybody will agree that at that point there were the seven mitzvot b'nei Noach. What is one of the seven mitzvot b'nei Noach? Gilui Arayot, no adultery, and included in adultery is, of course, incestual relationships. One of those incestual relationships explicitly forbidden by the Torah, and I think it's pretty clear, is
Your brother's
father's wife.
But Bilhah was was really a wife.
Yeah, a wife of. Okay, a concubine. Doesn't matter. Your father's concubine. Okay. That's also not permitted. That's also forbidden. So what in the world is going on? You have to ask a deeper question. What in the world is Reuven doing? What motivates him to do something like that? I mean, it's very sort of terse, the Chumash describes. Oh, by the way, you know, they moved to, you know, this place, and then Reuven, by Yishuv Reuven and Filha, Pilegesh Aviv. Why in the world did Reuven do something like that?
And it sounds like an afterthought.
What do you mean like an afterthought? Just to sort of, just slip it in there.
Right.
Actually, it's interesting. It says, you will notice that the pasuk continues. Vayishma Yisrael, and Yisrael heard. Vayihuyu b'nei Yisrael shnei mashar. And the children of Yisrael, the children of Yaakov, were 12 children. But you'll notice, by the way, see the break in between? The reason why Aris will put the break in between is because that's how it's written in the Torah. It's a parsha p'tucha. It's an open parsha. You almost never find, almost never find a parsha, a break of a parsha in the middle of a pasuk. In a sense, what the Torah wants to do is sort of like you say, not an afterthought, but sweep it under the rug. Even before we finish that inyan, we start a new issue. We start a new paragraph, a new issue.
Because there's no punctuation at the end.
Right, Vayishma Yisrael. And then it says, also, Vayu b'nei Yisrael shnei masar. And Yaakov had, Vayu b'nei Yaakov shnei masar. Yaakov had 12 children.
What is the
asterisk? Which is not news.
Which is not news, right. What in the world is that trying to say? What? Why would you say?
Is there an asterisk?
Where are you?
After Vayishma Yisrael.
You have an asterisk?
No.
I don't have one. Can I see? So what it means on the side is it says, Pishka be'emtza pasuk. She has it. This I bet is the newer version. I'll bet you.
Just looking. This is the first, second.
This is the
first and second impression.
You have first and second?
Yeah.
I'm up to fourth impression.
And it has an asterisk.
It has an asterisk. So they added things. It means Pishka b'emtza pasuk means exactly what I told you. A break in the middle of a pasuk. Why is there a break in the middle of the pasuk?
That's what I'm asking.
Yeah. Why? So it's obviously trying to stop a certain issue and almost like you say, sweep it under the rug. We want to move on. Move on fast. Don't even finish the pasuk. Move on.
This is already 11th edition there.
See, that's 11.
With an asterisk.
Here's the star too. All right, they added the star later on. Okay. And as Mr. Spark pointed out, it says Vayu b'nei Yaakov shnei masar. Newsflash: you didn't know he had 12 children. But so Mrs. Roberg, what does it mean?
It means that the children of the concubines were counted equally.
Well, how is that relevant to the issue? I mean, what you want to say is it's not at all relevant to the previous issue. We're starting an entirely new issue, and it's not doesn't have to really have anything to do with it. Is that what you want to say?
Yeah. No.
That would be somewhat surprising. I would think that at least it would have some relevance to the 12. So interestingly enough, let's see if I can find who said it.
Say that Reuven did something wrong because...
Yes, he did.
He violated the law toward a mother of one of some...
Why did he do it? Why did he do it?
He lost children.
Why did he do it?
Honor his mother
somehow.
We know that
he's shot. Don't get me wrong. I can think of a lot of ways to have two of an
A. We're going to have a shloshim. Oh, very nice. You know. Or, my son is making a shiyum.
Okay.
Lovely. My son slept with a concubine.
Absolutely.
Good.
He's mine. That's what he thought he was doing.
Why do you see that? Why do you say that? Keep it out of aim. What motivates someone to do that? It's very, very difficult. First of all, let's bring the Rashi, because Rashi is most important here. The Midrash is most important here. And this is one of those times, so you have to read Rashi. It says Rashi, Vayishkav. Okay? It says Vayishkav. See the second line in Chabdeis, the second line, the first column. You know, I recommend some of the women in my other shir, they actually got themselves a Chumash with Rashi. So that, because they have trouble following inside this Rashi. So some of them got with translation, some of them got without translation, but you'll notice I very, very often like to do Rashi. So it's not a bad idea. If you find have trouble following along in this little teeny Rashi, so then it would be worthwhile for you to bring a Chumash that has a bigger Rashi that you can follow in. I always believe that when it comes to Svarim, that when it comes to anything, it's really worthwhile having the thing that's going to make it easiest for you to do what you need to do. So, you know, if you're going to buy Svarim, so you always buy the version that you're going to use the best. You know, and if you're going to buy, you know, knives in your kitchen, buy the sharp ones. Now, buy the good ones. You know, there's a big difference. When we were first got married, so somebody gave us one of those Farberware, you know, 20 of them for $8 knives. So when we, one Hanukkah, I brought, you know, a set of, I don't know, whatever they are, you know, the German really cool knives. It was that Henkel, that's right. It's a night and day. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable. You really, you know, you notice the difference. In any case.
That wasn't what's best for you. Am I really, I noticed that there's a guilty mouth.
Why is one exclusive of the other? Yeah, you still have to learn the Chumash. You have to learn the Hebrew too. I would say it's not bad to get it from the internet, but you also have to do the other. You know, you should learn Chumash on Shabbos too, even when you don't have the internet. Or a lot of people, what they like to do is they like to print up. They print up, you know, piles of sheets, and then they spend Shabbos. I don't know.
Everybody take one.
The sheets are great. There's only one trick with them. There's only one thing you have to remember about them. They're not worth anything unless you read them. You know, that's important to remember. Vayishkav says Rashi, Mitoch shebilbel mishkavo, ma'ale alav hakatuv ki'ilu shachva. What does it mean? What did Yaakov, what did Reuven do? Bilbel mishkavo. He mixed up the beds. Yeah. Meaning, Rachel died. So Reuven, says Rashi, did not sleep with Bilha. Chas v'shalom. What did Reuven do, according to the Midrash? He switched it so that Yaakov would sleep with Leah and not sleep with Bilha.
So in other words, when Yaakov made his tent,
Velama bilbel v'chilel yitzuo. I'm in Rashi on page 190. First column in Rashi. Third line. Velama. See the second word on the third line? Velama bilbel v'chilel yitzuo. Why did he mix up and desecrate Yitzu'o? How would you translate that? Anybody, I need help, Mrs. Roberg. What is Yitzu'o? I don't remember the word exactly. I don't remember. Why did he confuse and mess up his Yitzu'o? Well, why did he do it? I don't remember what that means. Kishemeta Rachel, when Rachel died, Natal Yaakov mitato, shaitan mituna tadir ba'oho Rachel. Yaakov took the bed that was always at Rachel's tent, velo b'shar ahalim, and not in other tents, the natna, the ohel, bilha. And he put it in the place of his, in the tent of Bilha. Bilha was the concubine, was the maid of who? Was she Rachel's Bilha? Yeah, Rachel was Rachel. Baru Uven, the tava ilavon imo. So Reuven came and he claimed the sadness of, or the honor of his mother. So remember you said, it is Kibbut Avein? It was Kibbut Avein. Amar, he said, Aim achos imi haisa tzara li'imi. Aim achos imi. The mother of my mother's sister. Aim achos imi. Haita tzara li'imi. Maybe Bilha was, I don't know. Shuchas achos imi. Oh, sorry, thank you. Aim achos imi haita tzara li'imi. If my sister, it didn't make sense. If my sister was a tzara, you know what the word tzara means? Tzara is the Gemara's language for the relationship between two co-married wives. Meaning, let's say, Rachel and Leah were both married to the same husband. So in the language of the Gemara, they're called tzarot. Which means, what are they? Tzaras. Right. So I used to think, what? Jean Tran told me that what it really means is, lachur means to tie them together. They're bound together. But it also certainly has the connotation of trouble. So he says, it's bad enough that my mother's sister was her tzara, was her co-wife. Shichas achos imi kehe tzara li'imi. how could it be that my mother's sister's maidservant, she should be a sarah to my mother? Lekach bilbil. Therefore, what did he do? He said, no way. It's not going to happen. So the question, well, obviously, Reuven, he erred. Yeah, Reuven made a mistake. In a way, he sinned. But says Rashi, what was his motivation? Like we said before, kibud av ve'eim, out of honor for his mother. And, but interestingly enough, so if Rashi's correct, if the Gemara is correct, so when they quote from the Gemara, he didn't, look what he didn't do. He messed up the beds, he switched the beds, which was an incredible invasion of his father's privacy. It's not his business. But at the same time, look how the Chumash writes it. It says, Vayishkav et bilha pileges aviv.
It's
very close
to
the kind of way. Correct. Is that persistent? Maybe. I don't know if that's why. Why does it say it that way, or if it's just because the Chumash cannot accept that Reuven would have actually done such a terrible thing. You know what I'm saying? But it's still, imagine the indictment. How terrible the indictment is. For the rest of history, it's written down about you that you slept with your stepmother. Even if you didn't, because you committed such a great desecration. Okay, what is Yaakov's reaction?
He inherits him.
What?
He takes Yehuda as the firstborn.
Okay, interestingly enough. But look what it says. It says, Vayubnei Yaakov Shnei Masar. Yaakov's children were how many?
12.
Why does it need to tell us that? We asked that question at the very beginning. Listen to what Sforno says. This is Sforno. Af al pi seshama, even though Yaakov heard what Reuven did, lo hi pilo mi minyan banav. What did he not do? He doesn't disown him entirely. What he could have said is, you menuvo, you disgust me. This is what a child of Yaakov Avinu does. You know what? You know, my father had to sort of get rid of the chaff. My Zeta had to get rid of the chaff. My dear son Reuven, I love you, but you can't inherit. You can't be part of Klal Yisrael.
So that's why it emphasizes still Shnei
Masar. Shnei Masar, correct. So Sforno says, that's why it's still Shnei Masar. It says, Ki lo hayash shafek, Yaakov had no doubt, she'asat tshuva le'alter. That Reuven immediately did tshuva. Okay? V'lo ne'edar mi'minyan b'nei Yaakov. Okay? And nothing was there in order to force Yaakov, to coerce Yaakov, to disown him and make him not one of the children of Yaakov, if you can do such a thing. Okay. That's what I said. He moved Yaakov's bed out of what's the matter? He's not a child. What do you think? He's a boy? He's not a child. Yeah, shouldn't we all realize why we're doing it, why we don't sin, and then, you know, not have that problem. So, I mean, you know.
Was his intent to trick his father to sleep with Leah and Mount Silva?
I don't think to trick him, I mean, he's not stupid. Yaakov went to put his bed with Bilha. You know, why does Yaakov put his bed with Bilha? According to the, for obvious reasons. Right, that's his connection to Rachel.
But there's something else so interesting here. She's raising Binyamin and Yosef, the two children.
Who said that? The Ark the Scroll?
I was just reading it. It said that perhaps because Bilha, as the loyal handmaiden to Rachel, was raising Yosef and Binyamin to be closer to them, he moved into...
You know, it's so interesting and in a way so sad, the love of Yaakov and Rachel.
Right.
That Yaakov and Rachel really have such deep love for each other. And it's really a love that we don't see beforehand. But nowhere does it say that Abraham and Sarah really loved each other. Mm-hmm. Yitzhak loved Sarah for one reason. Why? Why did Yitzhak love Sarah? What was most about Yitzhak, about Rivka that Yitzhak loved?
Because he loved his mother.
Right. She was actually reminded of his mother. She did what...
She walked into the tent and when everything was closed and she had the son.
Correct. She was like his mother. Now, Yaakov, why does she love Rachel? He loves her immediately.
Right.
It doesn't really say why he loves her. He just loves her, and he can't get her out of his mind. Remember the Rashi?
Yes.
Remember we said that we learned the first Rashi last week that we learned, when Yaakov saw Rachel, and he ran over and he kissed her, and he cried. He wailed, he cried. Why? Remember Rashi? He knew that he wouldn't be buried together with her. And that was that caused him to cry. So imagine the powerful love that was between them. And this love is almost, it's never completely fulfilled. Because what would you expect this love? He's going to marry Rachel and they're going to get have children and live happily ever after. But what happens?
It's Leah.
And gets Leah. What?
Leah got in the way.
And it's always there.
No.
She's always there. You know, and there's always that specter of Leah in the household of Yaakov and Rachel. Now, on the one hand, you feel bad for Yaakov and Rachel. But on the other hand, poor Leah. Can you imagine? Here, you know, you have two people. They're always, you know, crazy about each other. And
she's the awesome.
You're the Swiss company. You're the Swiss crowd.
Right?
And she's the mother of all the sons. Right. So it's interesting. So now, what compels Reuven to do this? What is it about his personality?
I think what bothers him is about Yishmael. So he's saying, you know, he takes the bed of whoever it is, so he just sees that it's the wrong. It's not furious. Like somebody ran and told him, oh, by the way, Reuven's moving bed.
Uh-huh. He heard. That's exactly what happened.
Huh?
That's exactly what happened. He heard
about it. He noticed it on his own, is what I'm saying. This is something that on his own he would have noticed.
It's interesting. To me, you wonder, meaning...
Go back to the, you know, when they got married.
But it's interesting. I mean, you're wondering, why does Yaakov have such a tepid reaction?
Well, what is the Vayishma? I mean, why can't he...
Vayishma implies, Rashi says, the Ramban says, Vayishma Yisrael means, meaning, what was his response? What was Yaakov's response? Where did it say that?
No.
He's passive about it.
What's Yaakov's response?
No response.
No response. He heard. He chose not to respond. So the Ramban says, Vayishma Yisrael, says the Ramban, Shipira Katuv an Vitanuto. It's telling us his humility. Why? Because he heard what his son had done. Velo Chivas Yochi Uhumi Bito Michlal Bana. And he didn't overreact. Rightfully, a father would have every right when a son would do that kind of thing, to say, you know what, I don't want you to be part of my family anymore. But Yaakov, for whatever reason, because out of his humility, didn't do that. You know, I thought about this, and I was thinking to myself, do I perceive it, does it seem to me to be a weakness or a strength that Yaakov doesn't react in this case? And I think that in this case, it is a strength.
He's anchored to himself.
Correct. That here his son did this unbelievably egregious thing, and Yaakov has learned over the years to save his aggression for someone on the outside. Right, I pick his battles, you know, for the outside and in the internal squabbles to try and be someone who reaches consensus. Now, sometimes, you know, it's interesting. Yaakov, we spoke about it, I don't know if it was last year or 2 years ago, the whole story of Dinah and Shechem. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody remember the story of Dinah and Shechem? Dinah went to Shechem and then, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And Yaakov, again, wanted to be a passive. He didn't want to be aggressive. One gets a sense here that Yaakov is tired of fighting. He wanted to settle down. He just, you know, he's not in the mood to fight anymore. Reuven did it. It's a disappointment. You know, after a certain point, what can a parent do anymore? He's a grown man. You know, what are you supposed to do?
Also, Pastor, he understood where it was coming from, even though it was wrong.
Yes.
He understands where it's coming.
Yes. So where's it coming from?
I mean, from his jealousy of Rachel.
Why Reuven? Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zebulun.
He fought the longest.
It's just interesting. So let's go back. It's so interesting. Let's go back. In order to really have a better picture of this, in order to really get a good picture of who Reuven was, you first have to start with when he's born. When is he born? Last week. Very quick, you know. Very quick. Hold on. We'll get to that. Here we are. Page 152. It is Weiss 152. What's that? Lamed Beis. Lamed Aleph, actually. Vayar Hashem ki sinu'at Leia. God, in a sense, understands the situation we're in. Lamed Aleph, on page 152. God understands the situation. Vayiftach et rachma v'rachel akaras. In order to compensate for this terrible pain that she's in, God allows her to have children, and Rachel no children.
Isn't shluah kind of a harsh word?
Is it accurate?
I mean, he didn't hate her.
Here, it's interesting. Article translated as that Leah was unloved. But it doesn't say that. It doesn't say that.
No. But to me, that interpretation, Snua was like hated.
Who hated her?
I don't know why she was hated. Maybe he didn't love her.
It could be both.
So you're thinking that it's Yaakov hates her, but it could be Rachel hates her.
Why did she hate her?
And besides.
Why? Because she was the first. She wasn't the first.
You know, this is a very interesting. I think hated is not too strong a word. This is a very interesting aspect of human nature. Someone comes to me and says, Rabbi, I have this terrible problem, and, you know, for example, lo aleinu, it shouldn't happen. Someone comes to me, a woman comes to me and says, Rabbi, I have a terrible problem. My husband refuses to give me a Jewish divorce. And then you intervene. So I do my best, call the husband. Turns out he's a low-life jerk and absolutely refuses to give his wife a Jewish divorce under any circumstances whatsoever. Okay? So I come back to this woman and say, I tried everything I could, you know, but what else could I do? I really don't know what else I could do to force your husband to give you a get. You know, what? In a sense, no, not two. Correct. Human nature is thus such to take that anger that you have and you express it on something where you can express your energies, where it will be, it might do something in a sense. So that person takes the pain and the anger that they have against their husband and redirects it towards, in this particular situation, the rabbi. I mean, it's human nature. Really, really, very often human nature. I was talking to someone who's involved in legal cases, and he told me that very often he's involved in a divorce case, and then what happens is the couple will reconcile. Now, when you get involved in divorce cases between husbands and wives, what do they tell their lawyers? And all the schmutz. I mean, really the schmutz. They tell them all the bad stuff. And she did this, and I did that, and he did this, and they did that. And then they reconcile. So they've forgiven each other. Except there's one remnant, there's one, you know, little piece of history from that nasty piece in their life. What's that remnant?
The lawyer.
The lawyer. He knows everything about them. So instead of hating each other for all the terrible things they did to each other and said to each other and acted out on each other,
they transfer
it to the lawyer. It's human nature, and you see it over and over again. It's called, I don't know, I think it's a Freudian term, it's called transfer. Right. We do this.
Sure.
Well. Yeah, and
the parents, then the adults,
you know, very often, and we often do this also. I'm upset at somebody for something they did to me or something they didn't do to me, and who do I lash out against? I can't lash out at a member in the shul.
That's
right. So who do we hurt? The ones we love the most. Right. It's human nature. Really, it's human nature. It's a terrible thing, but it's human nature all the same. And so, isn't it interesting? Here you have a situation. Who is the evil person in this little situation?
Lava.
Who is the person that they all can't stand?
Lava.
Right? Yaakov said, I want to marry Rachel. Lava said, fine. Leah is more or less but a pawn in this whole story.
Mm-hmm.
Her father says, you're going? Does she have much of a choice? She has no choice whatsoever. She really doesn't.
Well, she probably might have wanted to go.
Hard to say. Okay, the Midrash says otherwise she would have married Esav, and that's why she's crying the whole time. I don't know. Hard to say. She clearly had no choice. All of a sudden, he wakes up in the morning and has this unbelievable anger at Laban, but he can't express the anger at Laban. Why? Because Laban holds all the cards. What cards does Laban hold? Just one very important card. His daughter. So I can't express my anger at Laban. So the next week, I marry Rachel. Rachel is seething. Who is she seething at? She can't stand. Who can't she stand the sight of? Her father. Look what he did. Here is the man she loved and loved her, and she had these dreams of happiness for 7 years of planning a chasana together. Can you imagine every Shabbos they take a walk together down to the stream. They talk about what they're going to do when they get married and the house they're going to build. And he tells her about Eretz Yisrael and about the life they're going to have and about the promises for the future. And who screwed it up?
Lavan.
Her father. They hate Lavan. They hate him. Except they're living in his house. So who takes the brunt of it? The vehicle where they can express that anger, that hatred. So imagine waking up and having breakfast every morning, those three together. So is it too strong to see that Leah is snua? Leah is hated. Right. Maybe they didn't hate her, but maybe she became the vehicle for their expression of their hatred.
What about a wife that's saying, what if your husband was? And he's also president of the show. And he gets double set. He gets double from him. Because, well, you never going to go back to the show. You don't go back to the show.
I think the hardest job of being a rebbitzin is being the rabbi's wife.
Mm-hmm.
By far. Because the shiurim, good shiurim, give shiurim, not give shiurim. You know, inviting people, very nice. You know, doing hospitality is very nice. But the hardest part is, right, not necessarily abuse, but, you know, when I come home and somebody's been particularly nasty or inappropriate or whatever, so my wife has to sort of soften the blow. They take the edge off. That's a very hard thing to do. It's because it's a very, you know, it's a very public thing. You know, you're like in public, you got to smile all the time. And it's not so easy to do that in private also.
Yeah.
You know, as we all know. Okay. So what happened? Lamedet. Vatahar Leah Vateled Ben. Leah was born, and she gave birth to a child. Vatikra Shemo Reuven. Look! Boy! What's the name of the child? The name of the child is
boy, yes.
I had a boy. That's his name. She named him. There's two more words in there before Reuven. There's two words that are implied. What are the two words? Hey Rachel, Reuven. You have to see those two words in there. Hey Yaakov.
Look what I did.
It's Re'u Ben. What is Re'u?
Look, see.
Plural.
That's right.
All of you look. Ben. Why? I never thought of it as such a thing. Why? Ki Amra, she said. Ki Ra'a Hashem Be'oni. Kadosh Baruch Hu has seen my affliction. Ki Ata Ye'ahavani Ichi. Maybe my husband will love me now. So she says to her sister, first of all, right? You and your husband making googly eyes at each other over the dinner table.
Look what I did.
Right? Looks only go so far. I bore the son. And the son was, you know, the firstborn son was very, very important because the firstborn son would determine the bechorah and who would inherit and how it would continue. And it turns out it wasn't that way, interestingly enough. But the firstborn son was monumentally important. And don't think that Rachel wasn't crushed by this. That she wasn't going to bear the son that would carry on the name. But the second thing is, maybe he'll love me. Did it work?
No.
What?
No.
Yaakov didn't care. In fact, did it ever work? Could anything Leah do ever compensate for the love Yaakov has for Rachel?
No, I don't think so.
No. How do I know?
Because immediately
because even after she's dead, he loves her more.
Is that somebody else who he loves more than?
Correct.
He didn't move his bed immediately.
Correct. Even after she's dead, he loves her more. But who becomes the representative? Who becomes the vehicle, the avenue for the expression of the love of Yaakov for Leah? For Leah.
Reuven.
Correct. Reuven.
So that he was willing to take the wrath of his father to spare his life.
Hold on. Now imagine, he walks around, now we need to say a name is a name. But if the mother made up the name, you know, anytime somebody makes up a name, it always sort of sticks out in your head. Anybody who made up a name? What's it mean?
Made up one?
Sort of made a combination name or something that's unusual. Okay, they picked the name specifically for a reason.
What? There's something in the free press today about names.
So my cousin had,
And it seems black people usually make up names.
Interesting. So did apparently Rachel and Leah. My cousin, they couldn't have children for a few years. So the first thing, they named their first son Netanel. Because it has meaning. So it's not just Netanel. I mean, but when they walk around, you know, I don't know how much it reminds them, but, you know, when I see that boy, I remember. And I'm sure it reminds them also.
I had the adventure of giving up children for 5 years. Mm-hmm. The first one, the name Bracha.
Bracha, right. And believe me, it's not just a name, it's a Bracha.
Now they have 6.
Kleinahara.
Okay.
Yeah, that's some Bracha. You know? So don't think like Reuven. My name's Reuven. I don't think about anything when I name Reuven. Although, to be honest with you, I was the first boy after 3 girls. So maybe that's my father had something in mind. But I was named after a Reuven anyway. It just happens. I was named after somebody named Reuven. But when Leah named her son Reuven, she made a name, and that name carried meaning. You know, so she said, so one day, you know, Reuven is 8, and he says to his mother, "What does my name mean?" So what does she say? She said, "You are my first son, and I was hoping that your father would love me." You think she wouldn't tell him? Think he wouldn't know? How do I know that he knew?
Because of what he did.
Let's turn on, let's move on. Not then, let's look later on.
Okay.
Turn to page 154.
Why would you tell him that? Wouldn't he return his father for favor and his aunt?
He doesn't anyway. Doesn't the father favor the aunt anyway?
Yeah, but why should they keep him involved?
Why does she name him that?
I think children sense.
Well, without a doubt. What do you mean? My children can sense when I'm having an argument with my wife, even if I don't argue in front of them. Mm-hmm. They know instinctively. Mm-hmm. Why are you upset? What are you upset about? You know, you don't have to tell them. You know, because everything changes. The whole edge changes. By the way, and do you think this competition between Rachel and Leah doesn't filter down to the children? How do you think Yosef ended up in Egypt? Just by coincidence? I mean, I think that it's pretty easy to see that that was a mistake Yaakov made.
By favor?
By favor, of course. I mean, we talked about that. It's a mistake.
But Reuven, later on, he lived up to his responsibilities. He was the only one of the brothers.
Yeah, it was his little brother.
Tried to save Yosef.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
154. Pesach Yud-Dalet on 154, Yud-Dalet. Vayelech Reuven v'nei Tzirchitim. Reuven went in the times of the Tzirchitim, the times of the cutting of the wheat. Vayimcha Dudaim basadeh. And he found Dudaim. What are Dudaim?
Mandrakes.
Mandrakes. What are mandrakes? Well, flowers. Vayaveh otam el Leah ima. And he brought them to his wife, to his mother, Leah. So Tomer Rachel el Leah, Nili me do the ebenech. Can I have some flowers? Now, let's finish the story. Vatamar la hamakachach er ishi. Velakachat gam edu do the ebeni. It's bad enough, Leah says. You took my wife. You took my husband. You also want my flowers? I mean, to be honest with you, like, can you imagine every time that, you know, like, Rachel ran out of a cup of flour, right? So she sends her son, you know, Yosef, run over to your aunt's house and get a cup of flour. So Yosef comes running back saying, "It's bad enough," she said, "that you stole the husband. You also want a cup of flour? I only want to take a cup of flour," you know.
These weren't just flour.
So you all know that. These weren't just flour. These were mandrakes. They were aphrodisiacs. They were whatever, right? These weren't just roses brought home to brighten the home. Okay, they were dudaim. So therefore, what does she say? Vatomer, da 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 da, she says, I'm sorry.
It says right in the
English. I'd rather have the flowers, I need the infertility treatment, as opposed to the extra night won't help me, it's not helping me anyway. Now, let me ask you an important question. Why in the world is Reuven bringing aphrodisiac flowers home to his mother? Hey mom, I was at the drugstore and I noticed this on the shelf and I thought that you could use it.
To inflame her husband, to be passionate to her.
I mean, let me ask you, if it's really an aphrodisiac, is that appropriate?
No, unless like he said, like we all
have. See where I'm going, right.
That he felt that his mother was unloved and maybe this is a way to artificial stimulation of a love, of a caring, of something that would bring Yaakov to his mother's tent.
Correct. Obviously, that's where I'm going. But isn't it interesting that of all the children, who sees it as his responsibility to ensure that the love, that he could do whatever he could do in order to maintain the honor of his mother, in order to try to bring her love? He does. No other child brings home these mandrakes, brings home these diyaim, or for whatever reason, the Torah doesn't relate any other story about that. It's Reuven brings home the Duda'im, her Duda'im. Reuven sees it as a responsibility. He finds his mandrakes and says, this is for my mother. And he has a just strong connection and allegiance to his mother to try to bring about that love that he was supposed to bring about. In a sense, one almost gets the sense that he always feels like I failed. My mother wanted one thing out of me, and for some reason it didn't work, and he always seems to try to compensate for that. So in his birth, he was supposed to bring about the love between his father and his mother. Did it work? No. So what does he do? He runs out and gets Duda'im. Next. So then that doesn't work. You know, what does he do? He tries something else. Even after his mother's dead, he tries to try something else. Even after his aunt is dead. That's the whole thing. It's so unusual. Why would he do that? So it's so strange, so unusual. Unless he's trying to bring about this kavod ha'im, this honor of his mother, in this unusual way. And this, in this both times, the Judaim are inappropriate, and also to move his father's bed is unbelievably inappropriate. But each time, Reuven acts in this way because the whole situation is unbelievably weird.
It must have been pretty bad. And as you said, she's talking to him and telling him this. And here it says, I don't know.
Let's say she didn't talk to him.
Okay, it says he's only a couple of years old here. I don't know how much anyone believes that, right? It says he's only a few years old and somehow.
Hold a second.
It could be in a naive kind of way, in a very childish, very kind of naive, very innocent way. If I do this, then this is what's going to happen. You know, I heard all these stories. I heard the story about this.
I don't know. It's hard to believe that it's so that he's only 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one gets the impression that he's a little bit older than that. You know, it's hard to know how long the period this time was. But even so, nonetheless, he's bringing home these flowers, and he sort of knows. You know, and the Torah is trying to connect. Who cares who brought him home? If the relevance wasn't there, then why do we need to know that Reuven brought them? But Reuven has that. I think that burden from his birth, and he carries it all the way to the end. This idea of responsibility, this idea of obligation to his mother, this idea of honor of his mother. There's something very interesting that doesn't appear, where Reuven does not appear. Which story does Reuven not appear in this week's parsha? In Vayishlach. What's that? No, no, no. It's a relatively straightforward question. Anybody know? Where does Reuven not appear that you would expect him to appear? Very good, correct. The story of Shechem. Let's just briefly recap the story of Shechem. We all know the story. Dinah is the sister of who? The daughter of who? Bat Tzeh, it says, Dinah Bat Leah. Asher Liyav Davi Yaakov. His sister, right? She goes out to the city of Shechem and she decides she's going to go to the mall to go window shopping. The prince of Shechem, his name is Prince of Shechem, his name is Shechem. Right? You think that guy grew up full of himself? His name is Shechem. He finds, sees her and takes her home and apparently rapes her and keeps her in his house. Decides he wants to marry her. Little does he realize, by the way, the forbidden fruit is always tastier. The marriage never would have worked out so well. No, it's absolutely true.
Yeah.
You know, it's what's exciting, you know, as soon as you get married, all of a sudden, what the heck, you know, what happened here? Right? You know. That's right. And so he sends a messenger to Yaakov saying, we want to marry her. So look what the Torah says. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Page 182. So they say, who is answering? The sons of Yaakov. It's hard to know what their plan was. Whether their plan was just to steal Dina back, or what. It's hard to know. But it seems like all the brothers are answering in deceit, are answering deceitfully. You have to all go get a bismillah, and then we can do whatever we want together, it'll be great. So they all go back and get a bismillah, and then on the third day, skip to 184. Pasuk Chaf Hei. V'ayihi v'yom hashlishi biyotam ko'avim. And it was on the third day when they were in pain. V'ayichu shnei b'nei Yaakov, Shimon v'levi achei dina ish charbo, v'yavo al ha'ir betach, v'yahargu kol zachar. They came into the city in hiding, stealthily, and they killed every male in the city. Who killed every male in the city? So what's my question?
Where's Reuven?
Hey, what the heck? What? It's moving furniture.
Moving
furniture. No, not yet. Not yet. All of a sudden, Reuven becomes a pacifist? All of a sudden, he doesn't want to get involved? Why not? Why not? What's that?
He doesn't want to make his father mad.
He doesn't want to make his father madder. He didn't make his father mad yet. He hasn't done anything. Right? Why not? I don't know why not. Okay, I'm going to take a guess, but this rubber isn't going to like it. Perhaps, this is what it means when it says, Vayichu shnei b'nei Yaakov, Shimon v'Levi achei Dina. They were the brothers of Dina. Meaning, Shimon and Levi were focused on the idea that this man did this to our sister. Whereas Reuven was focused on one thing only. His mother. So they said, Reuven, come on, let's go. And that wasn't his thing. Went his in his bed. They said, come on, this is our sister. No. Not my thing. I'm not an activist when it comes to those things. I have other problems. I have other issues to worry about. Other priorities.
Why do you have to kill them all, though?
To be honest with you?
Yeah.
Because people only understand one language.
But it wasn't everybody's fault.
Well, Mepharshim deal with this question. And they say a number of things. I think the simplest answer is, because that's how war was fought back then. You didn't leave enemies. Because if you left enemies, mm-hmm. they would come back to kill you. Well, they had to fend for themselves. Is kidnapping the daughter of an enemy, or is kidnapping somebody's daughter and holding her for ransom an act of war? Sure is. So, in war, see, everybody likes to think, you know, we live in a time when we don't want any civilian casualties, and it all has to be clean and distinguished between, you know, between civilians and soldiers and Geneva Conventions. Doesn't work that way in war. In war, you're trying to kill me, and I'm trying to kill you. And I love how they always talk about rules. But we have to, you know, it's got to be a fair fight. That's not what war is. War is, if you're trying to kill me, I'm going to do everything I can to gain an advantage. That's what war is. You say, is it barbaric to kill all the men?
Yes.
Not in the war. Why?
But they weren't all responsible.
It says who?
Doesn't the person...
They say that they should have stepped forward and prevented it. They should have prevented that action. Even if that's not true. Even if they're not responsible, are they culpable? Do they hold responsibility? Meaning, are they going to fight for their king? Yeah. So you don't leave anybody behind. Because when you leave people behind, what happens?
They come back
and bite you.
What was the reason they waited until they had a breath and then killed them?
Because they were weak then.
It's on the third day.
No, but I mean, why didn't they just kill them? They couldn't... You know what I'm saying? Their plan was they had to wait.
Well, that's right. They haven't been weak.
Yeah, sure. Because they're all lying in bed, groaning.
No, I understand.
Right, you know. No, why? Because that's the best way to get upper hand. Because they're all, you know, lying in bed. So you kill as many as you can at that point. I think that's the way they did it. You know, so Yaakov didn't agree. Look what they say at the very end. We talked about this a couple weeks ago.
It's an awful episode. No,
yeah.
I don't think so. I totally disagree. So Yaakov says, how could you do this? You left me, you know, hanging in the middle of all these people. So we allow our sister to be a prostitute, hachazona.
If you want to fight, come on, fight, clean.
I couldn't disagree with you more strongly.
Yeah,
you mean you're saying the state of Israel shouldn't get every advantage that it can? It shouldn't have satellites, or we shouldn't have better planes. It should just be man to man, straight up. The stronger one wins. That's what you're saying? Because that's the dignified way of fighting. No, of course not. It's ridiculous.
It's cruel to ask to perform a meal, and then when they are suffering and they can't move anymore, then I go.
Is either cruel or smart?
Yeah.
But it gives the other nations what they can say about us, that we're so sneaky. But I think you're right.
Well, you have to be sneaky to survive in this world. Do you know what this? The United Nations just. The United Nations is global. The United Nations just voted. Just voted to send the building of the wall to The Hague, to the World Court. You know what the vote was? 94-3 with 78 abstentions. The whole world is against us. You gain every advantage you can. Take every advantage you can. And if they're going to be dumb enough to take it. So in Israel, they told us this when we were in Israel on our trip, there's a man named Eli Cohen. Anybody ever heard of a man named Eli Cohen? The spy, right. Eli Cohen... Right. He went to Syria. Right. If you never heard the story, it's an unbelievable story. He went to Syria, and he traveled as a... He said he was a Lebanese national. He was obviously... He was born in an Arabic country. And he went to Syria before the 1967 war in the 50s and 60s, and he built a very successful textile business in Syria. So he became more and more prominent in the community in Syria, and he became close with the king of Syria. I think it was king of Syria, yeah. So Syria was in control of the Golan Heights then. So Eli said they once took them on a helicopter tour of the Golan Heights. He was there, but he was in the helicopter with the president of Syria. And so Cohen said to the president of Syria, whoever it was, Assad, I think, he said, you know, you'll notice the Israelis, they're smart. They have eucalyptus trees. They plant a lot of eucalyptus trees to hide their installations. So, you know, maybe we should do the same thing. So, well, lo and behold, what do you know? Every installation, one of the Syrians did, they planted eucalyptus trees near every military installation. So then, when the 67 war came, all the Israeli pilots had to do, look at the eucalyptus trees, carpet bomb it, and that was the end of the Syrians. Was that slimy and sneaky to send a spy in there and trick them and make them think, you know, that he was a Syrian? Is that slimy and disgusting? That's war. That is war. They want to kill you, and you got to kill them.
That is fine, but this is a big difference between what Shimon and Levi did to them and just...
Let me ask you this. Yaakov... Why? Why?
Because they are not doing anything... this is Masen Amalek. Amalek, we attacked the tiger and the lame ones.
But I think also
maybe it's not Jewish.
Obviously they felt it was. They obviously felt it was. You know why? You know what it means when somebody doesn't thinks enough of you, thinks you know somebody thinks so lowly of you to take your daughter and rape her and then have the chutzpah to sit in your living room and say, I'm not giving her back until you let me marry her. You know what that is? Think about that. What kind of slap in the face that is. And you know what that says for the future? If you give into that and you let them do that, you know what that says in the future? That's the end of Klal Yisrael. There is no more Klal Yisrael. Because all you are is you're subsumed under the auspices of the great nation of Shechem. And the brothers, I believe the brothers had it right. You take our sister, and you think it wasn't calculated? That's the daughter of Yaakov, who's setting up camp right outside town. We better get this under control before something happens. He didn't love her first, he saw her. Remember, did he love her when he first saw her? I don't even remember.
I really think that, I think part of it may be the emotion that it is Mila, what it is. But I don't think it really represented that they were sincere in wanting to join.
Vayar ota Shechem ben Chamor hachivi nishi ha'aretz. Shechem, the son of Chamor, the president saw her. Vayikach ota, vayishkav ota, vayyaneha. He took her, he slept with her, and he afflicted her. And then, vatidag nasho bedina bat Yaakov, he fell in love with her. He didn't rape her because he loved her. Why did he rape her? To send a message to Yaakov and the sons. Oh, a message loud and clear. But when you send a message, you better be ready to get one back. And that's not low and disgusting? And maybe the message back was, you use a certain aver to get our attention. Let's get your attention back with that same... Yeah. See if it helps you now. I'm telling you, Mrs. Roberg, the people in the world today and always understand one thing. Strength.
But this was the way of behaving in the first place. A woman saw her come to Egypt. What does he say? Please, yes, it will happen right to you. You are will be taken and I will be...
Right.
Yes. It was the way they behaved. Very primitive. This is...
And that makes it okay?
Okay?
That makes it okay?
No, it doesn't.
Right.
It doesn't make it okay. But I think there is something missing in this.
See, it's interesting. You would like to think that the Torah, by the way, she's talking like me. It's crazy. What's going on here?
Yeah.
You would like to think that if what they did was so bad, mm-hmm. Where's the Torah's judgment and condemnation of them? So Yaakov condemns them later on. Okay? By the way, whatever happened to Levi's descendants? Levi, that aggressor, that horrible person, whatever happened to them?
Terrible things
happened to them. They only became the Levim and the Kohanim and the priests and the religious people in the nation of Israel.
Yeah, but later on they really tried. The Bechorim took over what the Levim did.
No, they took over for the Bechorim.
Yeah, that's correct.
Right. So they must have been really bad to be forever condemned. Whatever happened to the children of Reuben? What happened to the children of Reuben? Nothing. Really nothing. What happened to the children of Levi? Right? Kohanim. So, who's right? Sometimes you gotta do what you gotta do. Right, so I just want to conclude with Reuben. Why doesn't Reuben act? I don't know. It's hard to say, but you see that as you see through the different events, you see how the effect his mother had on him and his relationship with his mother throughout a number of times. And then once you know that, look next week at the actions of Reuben with respect to his brothers. And then think, what are his considerations then? Is he so worried about Yosef? Or on the other hand, what's he worried about? The relationship Yaakov's going to have with his mother, even after she's dead.